Are you a business looking for a fresh new way to reach potential customers? Well, you need to get airtime on IT TV, a 24/7 streaming and on-demand TV service online and on Roku. With Roku having a potential reach of 62 million people, it's a perfect opportunity to reach potential customers through affordable commercial and infomercial spots. Visit us online today at itnetwork.tv.
Good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an incredible show for you today. We're going to meet some amazing people, some amazing guys. Usually it's all the women. They say the women are talkers, the women want to share their stories, the women want to share their experiences. But today we have four young men who are going to share their experiences. So I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go ahead and share this show. So if you have a friend, a cousin, a boss, a nephew, whoever, a spouse, and they're not watching the Roundtable Talk Show, it's up to you to get them to the show. So send a text, send a tweet, make a post, send it out to your network, but let them know the Roundtable Talk Show is live, because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're introducing the show to your friends and your network, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our very first guest, Gramps. Gramps Jeffrey. When does a toddler start to learn right from wrong? What takes place in a family that influences a decision going through a young mind? I don't want to turn three. Explore the interaction between a family that is happening in just about every household in the world today. Written by the grandfather of six, Gramps Jeffrey. Good morning, Gramps. How are you?
Thank you very much. And I liked your introduction. A lot of young men here. Yeah, I'll buy into that.
How are you? Tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you do? And what are you passionate about?
Well, I am just retiring out of business, and I wrote a children's book living this past year because of the pandemic, you know, caused by COVID-19 isolation. Yeah, except for being able to be with my family, gave me a special time to watch and interact with all my grandkids. I got to tell you, what a trip that was. You know, all six kids have completely different personalities. The one thing they do have in common is a sense of curiosity and how excited they get when they accomplish something. So watching them grow year to year and how they interact with each other is really the basis of the book. As you can see, I Don't Want to Turn Three is the name of the book. And it's about all of the what age do you actually take on responsibility? Is it 3 years old? Is it 13? Is it 23? And in my case, I've got plenty of contemporaries at 63 that are just starting to take responsibility for what they do. So that's what it's all about.
Well, we have questions for you, Gramps, but we're going to go ahead and introduce our next guest right now, and that is Mr. Dennis Consorte. Dennis is digital marketing and operations consultant for startups and small businesses. He began his career in the early 2000s after selling his first e-commerce business. Good morning, Dennis. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm excited to learn from you.
I hope I can share some stuff. I am only a young man, so I'm not sure how much experience I have, but I'll do my best.
Absolutely. Well, tell us who you are, what you do, and what you're passionate about.
So as you said, I'm a digital marketing consultant. I generally work with startups and small businesses. And really what this comes down to is I went through a period of burnout a few years ago where at my agency, I had a whole bunch of employees, a whole bunch of overhead, tons of clients. I was doing private label services for three other firms. And it was too much. And I lost my sense of purpose. And it took me a couple of years to regain that. And now what I do is I look for companies. I'm very intentional about the clients I take on. I say no to most people. I like to work with companies that I feel good about promoting. So, for example, wellness businesses or small businesses that help other small businesses, those kinds of things. That's what I'm passionate about.
We definitely have some questions for you, but we want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And our next guest, also a nice young man, Mr. Victor Moscone. Victor is an entrepreneur and PhD candidate researcher on imposter phenomenon and help-seeking intent. Founder of Imposter Solution Coach, he helps women and non-binary entrepreneurs and leaders reframe their imposter thoughts through strategies to increase their self-appreciation and empowerment. Good morning, Victor. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Tell us about yourself.
Okay. So as you stated, I am currently a PhD candidate. I'm researching imposter phenomenon, which a lot of people know as imposter syndrome. And phenomenon is really what it's about because it's based on experiences. And it's something that I've experienced for pretty much all of my life and didn't realize it until the last, you know, several years ago when I understood and pulled all of this together and the detriment that it had on my life, where even though I was constantly striving for new accomplishments, going for a master's, in leadership, for instance, and realizing that when I was doing it, I was really kind of thinking that if I actually achieved it, I would then gain acceptance and appreciation from everybody else around me, and not realizing that I needed to get that from myself because of things that connected with me when I was growing up. And I realized that, wow, if I'm experiencing this, and then the more research I was doing about it, I'm like, many people experience this. And it's something that's pervasive, even in leadership, that it prevents them from really kind of connecting into truly who they are and what they're capable of as a leader. And even as an entrepreneur, pushing themselves to starting up what they want to, that I really wanted to go out there and help them to break down their own imposter thoughts, create a new mindset that's really supportive and empowering on their own to be able to take the steps, understand who they are, their skills, their abilities, and know that it's because of them they're able to gain the success that they can. But it's been an amazing journey so far, and I'm looking forward to seeing where this continues to grow to.
I'm looking forward to seeing where you grow to as well. We are going to come back to you, Victor. We want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Alan Lazaros. After his car accident, he focused on bettering himself, being the man he wanted to become, and doing what he wanted to do rather than what others expected of him. Now is his purpose to help people navigate their lives, to design a life they love living on their own terms. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. This is an interesting setup, and I'm ready to rock.
Let's go. Let's see. Tell us about yourself. Who are you? What do you do?
I'm a podcaster, a speaker, a coach, and a consultant. In the corner of my room over here, I've got a target with, it's called Alan's Genius Zone, and it's 1, 2, 3. It's like a 3-layered target, and the bullseye in the center is coaching and consulting. I think all of us have a Michael Jordan level talent, and a lot of times we're afraid of it. And it goes back to what Victor was talking about with imposter syndrome. It's like our greatest skill, the thing that always came naturally to us, a lot of times is what will unlock our true potential. And we're scared of our own potential deep down. And so for me, it's coaching and consulting. And I've really gotten more percentage on that side of things, particularly business coaching and consulting. I coach people that are business owners literally all over the world, Australia, Italy, you know, Canada. And it's unbelievable what can happen when you can really get people to lean into what their specific genius zone is. So at the end of the day, human optimization, team optimization, business optimization. I'm a computer engineer at heart, graduated from a tech school in computer engineering with an MBA. And so my engineering mind, in terms of unlocking people's potential and then creating systems underneath that in order to really create momentum and consistency, designed for simplicity, is what I'm about.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, one of the things that stood out to me, and prior to the show starting, one of the questions that was asked was, how did everyone come together? And I always say everyone is just brought together, random people, organic conversation, but somehow, some way, with over 300 episodes in the can, I always find some kind of unique vein. And what stands out to me from each of you is that there was a moment where you all kind of pivoted. Gramps talked about the pandemic and being there with his children. Dennis talked about going in a different direction and focus on the business. Victor was aspiring, and he kind of got this imposter syndrome, imposter phenomenon, as Victor called it. But for you, Alan, it was a car accident. So when you're speaking, you're talking about your engineering mind, which to me is very logical, very technical. But there was this moment where it seems you went more towards the feeling, like, what do I want to do? Would you say that's correct?
100%. Yeah. When I was 26, I got in a near death fatal car accident, and it shook my snow globe, so to speak, and got me to question everything. I had a lot of regret, and I found a couple resources that helped me really change my trajectory forever.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Victor, what was that moment like for you when you decided to change your trajectory?
It's hard to say that it wasn't really specifically one moment, but it was the accumulation of many different moments where I ended up getting to a point where I was extremely depressed. I felt like my life really had no meaning or direction based on a variety of other things that were going on. And I really questioned everything that was happening at that time and thought, wait, this can't be what life is supposed to be like. And going through therapy at that moment then, realizing what was going on in my life. And it wasn't the fact of, okay, all of these things are affecting me. It was how I was seeing everything and how I was, I had created this mindset against myself where I didn't see my own qualities. I didn't see my own talents. And I felt that I wasn't worth anything. I wasn't good enough. And at that moment, it was like everything started to fall into place. And I realized, wait a minute, I can do this. I have the opportunity and I need to start making changes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you looked at it as an opportunity. Gramps, you looked at it as an opportunity as well, because I can tell you right now, honestly, if I had six grandkids running around the house, I would pull my hair out. But you said, you know what? Let me become an author. So this was an opportunity for you.
I think I brought the wrong book to this discussion. You know, but the first book that I wrote is called The Secrets of Retailing, How to Beat Walmart.
Oh, wow.
And this is a book that I wrote when I was I started the premier business to business site on the internet where we sell in case quantity to small businesses all around the world, shipping to all 50 states around 44 countries. Our customers are the moms and pops who are surviving and thriving against the chains. So as you're talking, your group here is entrepreneurs and people that help small businesses. That's my passion. That's what I've been doing all my life. And then when I finally retired, my passion changed to really focus on the grandkids. I would love to talk about entrepreneurship and building businesses with all your other guests that are here today.
Absolutely. Let us know what questions you have. That's what we're here to do, to have an organic conversation. For you, Dennis, you mentioned that your focus is on working with certain type of businesses that are in the wellness industry. Why did you make that distinction? Was it a moment, you ran from corporate history? What happened? Corporate America, rather. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm not a corporate guy. This is not who I am. I've been in the small business world for a very long time. For me, it was really kind of like what Victor was saying. It wasn't one moment. It was a period of time. And what I had realized a few years ago was I spent all of my time trying to make the cash register ring so that I could pay salaries, pay my overhead, service my clients, get more clients, and then rinse and repeat the whole thing. And it drove me crazy, and I forgot why I was doing it. And I became an angry person, and I didn't really know why. And I just had to take time off. So I took a couple of years off to figure out who I was. And I started realizing that I needed to regain my sense of purpose, and I pursued different avenues. So kind of like Gramps, I actually did produce a few children's picture books a few years ago, but that wasn't for me. It wasn't my calling, but it was a fun exercise to do. I also tried other things. I got involved in a political campaign, which gave me a tremendous sense of purpose at the time. And it made me realize that this is what I was missing, was this sense of purpose. But that's not a sustainable thing. And I tried other things too, and eventually I came back to where I was. But instead of trying to service 40, 50 clients or more, and just, you know, bringing on as many people as I could, I said, you know what, let me narrow it down and find clients that when I work on their stuff, when I bring them value and I bring their customers value, I feel good. I feel like I've accomplished something and I've brought something to the world. And so that's why I really focus on certain types of businesses. I like wellness businesses, for example. During my time off, during my recalibration, I had some issues. I gained a bunch of weight. I'm still in my weight loss journey. So that kind of thing is important to me, and also getting into the mentality of, you know, having the right mindset and all of those things. So that's some of the stuff that I get into.
Very interesting. I saw you smiling and agreeing, Grams, especially when Dennis was talking about the weight gain and the different things that he was going through. What did you see? And Victor also talked about depression and some of the things that he were going through. When you made this drastic change, what are some of the things that you saw that made you just kind of want to have fun and do a children's book?
Well, what I really heard from all of your other guests was their early life was devoted to building a business, doing something, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what made me really, and mine was too, you know, the whole focus was how do I grow and build and so forth. And sometimes you ignore your family while you're doing that, you know. And if I have any advice for people that are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, you know, don't do that. You got to be able to focus on your family. You know, because these kids, this generation that's coming up, I'm telling you, is smarter than any generation that we have been involved with. You know, I'm a baby boomer, so I always thought our generation was the smartest. It's not. You know, these little kids that are coming up are very curious, intuitive, and it's up to us as adults to spend time with them to help them grow. You know, I've always felt, you know, it's necessary to teach children how to think, not what to think, but how to think. And, you know, if we're so involved in our lives and building our businesses and so forth, and we forget these little kids, you know, shame on us. So as I heard from all the other guests, you know, we love our businesses, we love growing them, but, you know, don't forget that it's our obligation to teach the younger generation. We've got to go to their games when we can. We've got to be there to see at their concerts. So I would urge all of your listeners to think through, you know, the balance of family versus what their work is.
Yes, absolutely. Alan, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the balance, just having a work-life balance.
I think I like the word harmony a little better. Mm-hmm. Health, wealth, and love. So personal development, after my car accident at 26, I'm 33 now, even though I look 12. No. So, so I'm 33 now, but it's been about 7 or 8 years now since my car accident at 26. And I went all in on personal development. And that's what our podcast is about as well. Holistic self-improvement, holistic personal development, the holistic piece, because I agree again with what Gramps was saying of like, when you have a business, it can really take over your life if you're not careful. And I see that with many of my business owner clients as well. And so holistic is health, wealth, and love. So health is physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. Wealth is how you make your money. In other words, do you actually enjoy what you do? Not every moment. You know, some of us are going to have days that suck, but like in general, do you enjoy what you do? Okay. How much money do you make at it? In other words, is it marketable, right? Is it a skill that people care about in the marketplace? And then the third is, what do you do with your capital? Where are you investing that money? Back into your business, 401k, stocks, ETFs, all kind of thing. Then you've got love. Love is your intimate relationship first, then your family, immediate family, extended family, business partners, clients, mentors, mentees, all of that, friends, all of that. And so those are the three main buckets that I play with. And my clients, I have 18 clients right now, and we all do something called peak performance tracking, every single one of them. And my entire team does peak performance tracking as well. And it's basically a simple tool where you track your habits. You have one KPI, one key performance indicator that you use every single day. And this is like, what's the one thing that if you track this one thing, the rest of your life will proliferate? Then there's 12 habits. We call it a daily dozen, system of success. 4 habits under health, 4 habits under wealth, 4 habits under love. And you basically ignite the compound effect of momentum when you do those small daily disciplines every single day. My business partner, Kevin, had a 100% week last week where he did every habit every day, and he's just absolutely flourishing. And so the goal isn't to be perfect. It's to be better and better and better and better each day. Kevin and I put $100 in a financial calculator, and we calculated how much would that grow to if we were to grow it by 1% per day for 1,000 days, because we're coming up on 1,000 episodes, and we wanted to understand how much we grew if we improved by 1% per episode when we get to 1,000. Came out to $2 million. So my point is if we can get 1% better per day, every day, 7 days a week, for 1,000 days in a row, you end up 20,000 times better, because 2 million divided by 100 is 20,000. And so that's what I'm focused on for human optimization, team optimization, and business optimization, is like, what are the daily disciplines that actually will reverse engineer the holistic life that you really want to live, not just the business success?
Yes.
Can I ask Alan a question?
Yes, you may.
How do you get people to buy into that? I mean, that sounds great on paper, but how do you actually get people to say and commit to that longer than, 3 weeks? It's like, I'm going to lose weight in January, and by the end of January, you forget you're going to lose weight. How do you get people to buy into that philosophy?
So that's a really powerful question. I've been contemplating that my entire life, and I will continue to contemplate that my entire life. But this is the best I've got for you right now. You have to embody what people value. When I was a fitness model and winning fitness competitions, I'm getting some feedback, by the way. I don't know if someone's mic is giving me feedback. But basically, you have to embody what other people value. People value great physiques. People value great relationships. People value big homes and beautiful cars and success and business success. And so, unfortunately, you kind of have to embody what people think they want before they'll listen to what actually got it. And so, for example, we just surpassed $250,000 dollars in revenue in our podcast. And as far as podcasts go, that's like on the higher end, because most podcasts don't make a lot of money. And so once we get more and more success that people think they want, now they'll come and listen to how we actually built it, when in reality, we're doing it for a much bigger reason than the revenue, if that makes sense.
Does that answer your question, Gramps?
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Great question. Thank you.
It definitely was. Victor, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the conversation.
When he was going through and discussing it, it's like, you having to go through these steps. And it's true, because, any kind of change that you want to go through, it's not, a lot of people want the quick fix naturally. It's like, everybody wants to do it as quickly as we can, put as little effort into it, and I have everything I want. And onto that, connecting in with aspects of it, it's like he's talking about how people will see things on social media and elsewhere. It's like, oh, well, this is what I should be, or this is what I want to have, which of course creates this whole mentality of losing who you are and what your qualities are, because you devalue yourself by that, because you're constantly looking at everybody else and thinking, well, they have that, how come I can't, or why am I not that way? Which in turn, you basically just brush aside and dismiss what you're good at. And I think Alan was the one that mentioned this earlier, is that you're looking at your true core of who you are and what you're good at. And like the, I'm sorry, I can't remember the wording that you used, but like that Michael Jordan aspect of those talents that are the pinnacle of what you can do. And that's what you have to get back into. And you have to be able to see that for yourself, but not just see it, but truly embrace it and believe it. Because once you do, you can start breaking down those other negative mindsets or the comparison mindsets, thinking that you're not good enough and you have to be like somebody else, and start really trying to hone in on what you can do, building up who you are, which will help you to start gaining the achievement that you want, whether it's financial achievement, whether it's family achievement, any kind of business or wellness being or entrepreneurial, whatever it might be. But you have to be able to start seeing within yourself and believing within yourself that, hey, you know what? I can do these things. I have the skills, and it's not based on approval or appreciation or the comparison to others. It's based on my own growth. Just like Alan was saying, it's like working on yourself and improving each day. It's like you want to just get better for yourself. It's not because, hey, I want to get better so I can show that I'm better than those people over there. Because then again, you're going back to that whole competition comparison aspect, and you'll never match up, because there's always going to be something, and you're always going to see something that, oh wait, I don't have that yet. I have to start to just keep doing this. It's like your focus needs to be on your own personal growth, your own personal development, and your own wellness of your own mindset, and knowing that what you're doing is for your own benefit and growth within your own life.
Yes, absolutely. Now, Alan, you did mention the Michael Jordan aspect. Would you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so to kind of piggyback off of what Victor was saying, I think that we undervalue our own talents because we've always had them and we don't understand their value. So for example, my business partner, unbelievably simple and consistent. Now he designs everything in his life for simplicity and consistency, super, super consistent person. And in fitness, he's been working out basically minimum 5 days a week, every week for 16 years. And he's just in unbelievable shape. And he doesn't understand how valuable that is to someone who's never had that because he's always had it. He's always been, you know, in great shape, even in high school. I went to the same high school as him. And so my point is that a lot of us overlook our own talents and gifts because they've always kind of been innate in our nature. It's called an unconscious competency. So for example, like an extenuating example would be like Shaquille O'Neal. If you ask Shaquille O'Neal, how do you dunk a basketball? He'd be like, what do you mean? You just dunk it, right? And so we all have that in us in something. My assistant, her name's Amy, unbelievably kind, warm, thorough, thoughtful. Okay, she's such a gentle, wonderful, warm, loving person. I'm an intense dude, okay? It's not an unconscious competency for me to be so nice, warm, and loving like her. But her as my assistant, everybody loves Amy. They reach out to her. She does my Instagram. She does my Facebook. She does my LinkedIn DMs, messages. As a matter of fact, you probably have interacted with Amy. She's in her genius zone because she loves people. She loves interacting with people. She loves connecting with people. She loves it. And so she's in a position to succeed where she's valued. I have a team member in Italy, and he's the COO of our business. And he said, Alan, you use Tom Brady all the time in your podcast and as examples, and no one in Italy knows Tom Brady. So like, stop doing that basically. And I remember thinking to myself, like, imagine if Tom Brady gave a speech on football in Italy, like American football. It's like, no one would even value him. But if he did that in Boston or Florida, it would be like, oh my God, yay. So Tom Brady's value is not predicated on, it's very contextual. So my point is for everyone listening or watching, put yourself in a position to be valued. But more importantly, value yourself by understanding your own unique talents and actually developing those. If you're grateful for your health, prove it by developing your health. If you're grateful for your wealth, prove it by investing it wisely. If you're grateful for your intimate relationship, prove it by, you know, the love languages and being kind and emotional regulation and having, you know, difficult, challenging conversations with the other person's interests in mind, listening intently. The point is that no one's perfect. No one ever will be perfect, but better, everyone can be better. Everyone. And I'm way better than I used to be, you know, but I'm going to be better at 34 than I am at 33 because that's my main focus every single day. Who am I when no one's watching? That is what matters to me most, even more than this show.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's wonderful. Never heard it phrased that way, but I love to hear your thoughts, Gramps.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Alan another question because he's bringing up some great things. You talked about you being different than Amy, different kinds of personalities. Is that something that was learned? Is it innate? Did someone influence you to do that? You know, why are you two so different?
I think it's an excellent question. We're going to allow Alan to answer the question. We're going to allow Alan to think about the question because we are going to stop for a brief commercial break and we'll be right back.
I've had this problem.
Big problem.
I really, really needed
a good business consultant.
And I kept searching
and searching.
There are so many choices.
It's really hard to find one that has all the things on my list.
But I finally did it.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you.
If you were looking for one as well,
look no further.
Here's a really good one.
Just use mine.
Use mine.
I'm very satisfied.
Definitely recommend.
Problem gone.
Thank you.
you need JordansRooter.com. Get free estimates, 24-hour service, special discounts for seniors and veterans. That's JordansRooter.com. Have a home repair or some remodeling you need done? No problem. We can handle all that too. Give us a call today at 800-300-0358. At Jordans Rooter, we take pride in our work and always make sure to get the job done right the first time. That's JordansRooter.com. We want to be your Mr. Fix-It.
Yes, if you are just now tuning in to the Roundtable Talk Show, you have missed out on an interesting conversation. You definitely want to watch it in the archives from the top of the show. But we gave Alan a couple of seconds to think about his response. Alan, what are your thoughts?
So, Gramps, first, I want to thank you for the amazing questions. And it's interesting because, you know, you're older and wiser, a couple of years older and wiser than me, and you're asking me questions. So that shows unbelievable humility. I really appreciate that. So I'll ask you the same question, but my answer, I'll try to keep it short. Nature versus nurture. We all have both. And I think we all have to follow our own natural inclinations. So everyone out there contemplate for themselves, like, what have I always been good at? What's the through line? What about me always was different, statistically speaking? Because I understand that comparison is bad from the sense of imposter syndrome and what Victor was saying. But some comparison is good in terms of statistical understanding of your value to the marketplace. So, for example, mathematics. I was the guy that got straight A's in calculus in college without going to a single class, partied the night before, and then just showed up for the test. Now, while that's not something I condone anymore, my point is that mathematics always has come natural to me. So I shouldn't necessarily be gardening. That's not my greatest level of contribution unless I'm super passionate about gardening. And so my point is that you have to chase that nature and nurture it in order to develop it. And what makes Amy and I different is our inherent nature.
Yes, I like that answer. And I really appreciate it because I always talk about that. I've said that I wanted to be one of those people who knew from the time they were born what they wanted to be in life. There are so many people who always knew, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer. I have a cousin like that who is an actual news reporter for Channel 4 News in Columbus, Ohio. But when he was 9 years old, he'd walk around the house with a spoon and he would interview everybody. So we just knew that this was his passion. I was like, I never had that. I never, you know, knew what my quote unquote thing was. But I'm a talk show host. And I remember being a kid and I'd go everywhere, you know, with my mom. And my mom would be like, if you don't stop talking, you know, because I'm like, Mom, why are they doing that? Why is he doing that? Why is she doing that? Why is that late? And my mom was like, please just be quiet. So I get it. I definitely understand it was in my nature. Gramps, Alan asked you the same question.
Well, what drove me to this question, excuse me, is my 2-year-old granddaughter, Grace. I mean, kids are so honest. You know, think about it. We as adults, we're not honest at all. You know, what we really think and say, we don't say sometimes because it's going to hurt somebody's feeling. But, you know, my 2-year-old Grace is turning 3 next month. She came up to me. She says, Gramps, you have a big belly. So I said to her, well, whose belly's bigger, your dad's or mine? She says, definitely yours. Okay. Nobody else is going to tell me that. Yeah. So we go back to thinking, yeah, well, maybe I should go on a diet. but you know, the thing that's driving me on this is, and a couple other examples. When my son was 3 years old, he says to me, I want a gun. And I said, well, you want a gun? We don't have guns around here. He said, I want a gun. Well, he grew up to be a policeman, and now he's a detective. You know, my daughter, when she was 3 years old, I'd be fixing the toilet. She'd be handing me the tools and telling me this goes here and that goes there. You know, she grew up to be a civil engineer. So sometimes you have that in you when you're a little kid. But, you know, where my mission is right now is to get grandparents and parents to really spend time and influence the decisions that the children are making, that the grandchildren are making. You know, and one of the best ways to do that is making sure you read them books. Okay. You know, reading my book, of course, I'm here for that. But there's 100 other great books out there that you can read to your kids. And, you know, what does that do? It causes bonding. you know, again, little kids, you're trying to influence them. You know, again, they'll grow up to be like what they want to be, like Alan grew up to be what he wants to be. But, you know, if you spend time with kids, you're bonding with them. Yeah, it's a nice way to spend some time together. Read them books. Get books into your kids' hands. You know, it supports their listening skills. We all know as adults that our biggest asset is how we listen today. You know, because how we listen can help us talk about what we're going to do to do. And so the listening skill is the best skill that we can learn. And teach these kids when they're 2, 3, and 4 years old to do that. You know, it also helps with their cognitive and language development so that they learn bigger words, they learn how to do it, they understand words, they question, they learn other words. So make sure you're reading to them. And then one of the most important things, the attention span. Even though reading a book's 10, 15 minutes, it really concentrates and gets kids to focus and get attention span. So I guess in a long way, I'm saying that, you know, all this is developed right when you're growing up at 2, 3, and 4 years old.
Yes, absolutely. Dennis, you've been quiet over there. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
You know, one of the things that seems to have come up a couple of times has been this idea of building systems. I really like that approach. I think it was Alan who was talking about using systems to live a healthier life. And that's how I like to approach a lot of things. So for example, with digital marketing, it's all about systems. If you have a small business and you want to create content for your blog, you have to build a system, right? You want to get writers, editors, keyword researchers, all of the different people who participate in that. So I do also buy into the idea of being 1% better each day. One of the things that Alan was talking about, I know that I think there's a book called Atomic Habits, which talks about that. Great book, highly recommend it. And if you apply that concept to everything you do, whether it's your health or the way you build your business, if you focus on building it that 1% better each day, I think you've got a really good shot at getting to where you want to be.
Yes, absolutely.
Victor, you're not. I got Atomic Habits right here, by the way. We're reading it in our book club right now. So amazing book, by the way. Yeah. So if you wanted to show it, Atomic Habits. I take the sleeves off because I like the.
I do the same thing. That's what. Yeah. Victor, you're smiling, enjoying the conversation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. One of the things I wanted to add to this, and with Gramps saying, parents, grandparents need to, you know, encourage and embolden their kids to, you know, try out things and those things that they're curious about, kind of keep them going with it, which is great. You need to, because that helps their curiosity, their interest to not even just for those topics and aspects, but other things as well. The one thing that can be a challenge too, though, is that not everybody has that kind of a dynamic. And so that's one of the struggles at times that later on in life, as you've gotten older, where the struggle comes into it when people aren't sure what they're good at, is those curiosities early on have been either downplayed or kind of just shoved off to the side. And even mentally, you know, in their own mindset, they don't think like those are really anything special. So, and because of the way, definitely even with society, people will look at it as, oh, well, you know, it should be, let's just say, and I'm going to hit this in a certain way, but it's like, you know, oh, well, that's not going to make you enough money, because they'll look at things where it's very direct as opposed to looking at some of these other skills. Instead of seeing how those skills can apply to having a fulfilling career, they're going to, and even successful just in your own life, they'll look at it on, let's say, a monetary aspect. So people will dismiss those concepts. And with the way the world is today, the talents that you can create and the way that you can actually bring that to other people is so much more diverse than it used to be. But a lot of the way things are still presented to us is very almost like a black and white situation. And so a lot of people will often lose out or miss out on what those talents are. And really finding a way to kind of reconnect with those talents and those unique skills is something that's really going to help them later on. So even if they've gone through 20, 30 years of their life, 40 years of their life, whatever it might be, and really have never done so, they've just kind of working a job that they're just working at. And I think Alan was the one that was, you know, finding your passion, where you're just kind of like doing the job because, hey, it's bringing me an income and I'm here, I'm got it, whatever. I don't really think I'm good at anything. You are, But again, you have to kind of go back and figure out what is it that you're good at. And even if you dismiss everything, kind of do that run through, like Elman is even mentioning, of like, okay, these are things that I've always enjoyed doing. These are things that I've always would connect to. These are things that I find that when somebody mentions that concept, that idea, that topic, or I see it, I'm kind of like drawn to it. And when I think about it, I've always had that connection to it. And you have to be able to pull yourself out of it as well from what other people have said, because it's really easy to have those other voices in your head going, yeah, but you know, that doesn't matter. Yeah, but you're not really that good. Yeah, but you know, it's not going to do anything for you. You know, and you have to be able to pull yourself away and really kind of connect with your own skills and go, hey, you know what? I've always enjoyed this. What could I do? Can I do something with this? Is this something I can really build a life that I enjoy? And I think that's something that can be really important for a lot of people in just being able to connect with themselves and building a life that they can then help and, you know, give guidance to for others.
What's interesting to me, and I heard everything you had to say, Victor, but I was rereading your bio when you were talking and the statements that you were making, and it stood out that you are focused on women and non-binary people. Is there a reason, like, do you feel that men don't have imposter phenomenon less than women?
Oh, no, they totally do. Don't get me wrong. It's not like, oh, it's one group over another. Men definitely do experience it. And there's been plenty of studies that show that there's an equality basically over that men and women both experience imposter phenomenon. Women seem to experience it more intensely. I'm coordinating to different studies than men do, but it's definitely out there. However, if you go and look at a lot of aspects of leadership, entrepreneurial aspects, more men will still kind of work through and push through those aspects than women do. Women will often kind of pull back and not feel that they are good enough or don't see those opportunities. And I don't discount the men at all. It's like, no, they definitely do. I'm totally representative of that. But at the same time, I want to make sure I've seen a lot of it, especially when I was teaching before, that I would see it hitting the girls at the time that I was teaching at a more intense aspect than the boys. And I could see that it was having a big impact on their own growth, development, and mindset. And again, not to discount the boys or the men, it does. And they definitely need that guidance as well. But it's one of those that sometimes in aspects of entrepreneurial and business and starting things up, you've got to find a focus and start with one spot to then grow out from there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Dennis, have you ever suffered from imposter phenomena?
It's a good question. I don't know if I have an answer to that. What I would say is that my leadership style has changed tremendously over the years. When I was much younger, I went through some periods where I was very cocky and I thought that people just needed to do what I say and what I tell them to do. And that was my leadership style. And then I'm wondering, why don't people like me? And that has transformed. And sometimes I catch myself getting back into that mindset and I have to pull myself back to where I want to be. And I think where I am right now is I like the concept of being more of a servant leader. I like the concept of giving other people the spotlight. So for example, when I work with people whose leadership style is all about me, I'm in the spotlight. Everything is about me and everything is because of me. That's a huge turnoff. So what I try to do is the opposite of that, where I try to give people the floor. So if somebody has potential to do more, let's give it to them. Let's empower them to do more and to make decisions and that kind of thing. So that probably didn't answer your question, but maybe it helps you understand where my head is at. Mm-hmm.
No, it answered my question and it gave me more than enough to work with, because, you know, I have to go over here and ask Alan. Alan, you told us earlier about Amy and how wonderful she is and thoughtful and how generous. But then you also said we're different. We're different kind of people. And had I not had a conversation with you, albeit a brief one, I would infer that you're this arrogant.
Oh my goodness.
The phone is not on silent. How dare you?
That never happens. I'm so sorry about that. My apologies.
No, it's okay. It's good. So just listening to what Dennis had to say in his leadership style, do you ever feel that you come across in a leadership style that's not as gentle, not as nice, not as warm?
Yeah, I do. So in our business, we have a 13-person global team, entirely virtual. Hopefully everything's okay. Sorry about that. So basically, it's understanding what your lane is and understanding when you do, because in our culture, there's basically no right or wrong, but there's always better. That's the main focus. There's no right or wrong, but there is always better. And I told Kevin this, my business partner. I said, Kevin, I'm never fully right, but I'm almost never fully wrong. And the reason what I meant by that, we call it a drive to five. So here's your position on the matter. Here's my position on the matter. So for example, an episode title, something simple, 7 episodes a week, we title them so that they're relevant to the topic, but they also get clicked on. Okay. He's better at that than I am, I believe, because he's more relatable and he understands how other people think a little bit better than I do, because I'm much more of an engineer, which statistically speaking is a smaller percentage of the population. And we have a bunch of science that goes into that. I'm not even going to go into it, but basically we drive to five is what we call it. So maybe he's more right than me, but my perspective has value. And so from a leadership perspective, what I'm trying to do is see the entire can from a 360 degree angle so that I can make a better, more effective decision. And what you guys, so I see, you know, the nutrition facts, maybe you see this B, right? And I want to ask you what you see so that I can now understand the whole and make a more informed decision is basically the main focus for my leadership style. But yes, I would say I'm more intense. And I think debate can be very constructive, not destructive. I think when you're not emotionally regulated and you're arrogant, I think it can be very destructive. And I've been guilty of that in the past. But I think constructive debate is something that I very much want to foster within our business and within life too, because I think it's important to understand a holistic approach. And you can't do that with one perspective. That's why I actually like this right now.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Yeah. So I like what Alan was saying. I have a very similar mindset. What I would also say is that, and I think Alan will agree with me on this, you have to also read the person, because some people aren't ready for that constructive debate. And so you have to start finding points of commonality first before you can have those harder questions or those harder conversations. I think that emotional intelligence is really a big part of how we interact with people in the business world. I mean, you all agree with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Victor, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Oh, just on the emotional intelligence, it's really important. It's an understanding of how to connect with the other person. It's an understanding of where they're coming from, how they see and how they're even emotionally connecting to aspects. Much of leadership in the past, and like years and decades in the past, it's been very authoritarian. It's like, you know, you're doing what I'm telling you, you're going to take care of it, I'm going to take care of it, I don't want to hear anything about it, I don't really want your opinion because I'm the one in charge. But over time, we've been seeing that because other people have value, they have valuable ideas. And as Alan was saying, it's like, hey, I want to hear what it's like. This is how I'm seeing it from my perspective. What are you seeing? Is there something I'm missing? That's where you're pulling people in. And you're not just hearing their words. You're hearing their emotions that go with it. You're understanding who they are. And even within a workplace environment, if things get... if they start becoming stressed, for instance, well, okay, what's going on? Is it because they're overworked? Is it something else that's outside of work that's affecting their work? And, you know, again, you want to connect in with it to understand what's going on to help support them, because you're not just looking at your own business and the end product. It's a bigger, broader worldview as to everything that's connecting to it and how it's being affected. So it's really impactful and it's really important.
Yes, absolutely. So we've talked about experience. We have to go over to Gramps and get Gramps' thoughts on the conversation.
Well, you know, we've been talking for close to an hour, and I still don't understand the imposter theory. Maybe because I'm an old guy and it's way beyond me. But could we explain that again?
Okay, so do you want to go back over? Is that a question for Victor then?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about it, and I don't even know what we're talking about.
Victor. Yes. Okay, so the imposter phenomenon theory is the aspect of basically you don't have self-belief in your own abilities. You constantly will seek out approval and attention from others to affirm your own self-worth because you never feel like you're good enough. Now, it's easy to say that, well, people will feel that often or at different points in their life. And you can attribute it to, let's say, when you get into a new job or a new career where you feel like, wow, I don't have the skills for this. I'm not sure if I can do this. And especially if you're hired for a new position, you can sometimes feel this way for a period of time until you start kind of getting the hang of it. And that's, you know, according to studies, they'll say anywhere from 70 to 80% of the population, the world population, will experience this at some point or another based on that. Those that experience this more on a lifelong experience, it's usually because of early childhood connections or experiences. Sometimes it's connected to, hey, you know, we will see your worth when you've achieved this goal. So anything in between doesn't matter. And it's like, even if, and if you don't achieve that particular goal, and it could be athletics, it could be education, then you're not good enough. So it becomes this internal narrative that you always feel like, well, I'm not good enough, and you'll see everybody else is better than you. So you could, and this is, you know, an extreme aspect, but let's say in school, you end up with, let's say 98%, you know, on your test, on your grades. Now to us, it's like, hey, that's an A, you're doing great, but there's other people getting 100%. So you're not good enough. Now, if the parents, other adults in that aspect keep indicating, well, that's good, but hey, they got 100%. That builds into your mindset. And over time, it will have a big impact where you will constantly feel like, well, I'm not as good as everybody else. Yes, I'm okay, but they're better than I am. And you start creating a bigger narrative in your own head that, okay, well, maybe if I just do this, then I'll be as good. But of course, you try to achieve or excel at something or gain, whether it's a job position or a new degree. And you're like, okay, well, I'm here, but it's not going to bring you that satisfaction because you're placing your worth on an external source. And so when you get that external source, you still don't feel like you have it because, well, I don't feel like I'm good enough. So you're missing that internal self-belief and self-appreciation that you have value, that you are worthy. And it's something that really has a lot of impact on people that experience it in a long-term effect because they're constantly striving for something. But at the same time, there's that fear that they can't do something because, well, I'm just not good enough. I'll never be good enough. So why even try? Does that help?
That's very interesting. We'll see if that helps, Grant. But let me just add to that, because I heard the numbers that you gave, Victor, the 70% to 80% of mm-hmm. the population. For me, the question is, and I also believe just about everyone has experienced it on some level, but for me, the question is not about being good enough. It's more of a who am I? You know, I would experience this when I started speaking to large crowds of people, and the whole, my whole brand is Ask Sharifa, and people were like asking all these questions. I'm like, wow, you know what I mean? I'm this little girl from Columbus, Ohio. Who am I to stand on this stage? Or when I started looking at my bank account, I'm like, oh my God, I'm this little girl, you know? So it's just understanding that no matter who you are worthy to be on larger stages or to grow your finances. But I don't look at it from a point where I've ever asked myself, am I good enough? It's just like, this is unbelievable to me because this is something I may have expected for someone else.
And that's actually a really good way of looking at it. That's a different perspective. And yes, and that's definitely something that others will, their perspective will hit that as well too, because they'll again see it like, okay, well, yeah, I figured anybody else would have been here at this position, but I would never be. And again, it's that turn in that mindset where you still don't see yourself in that way. You don't see yourself like, yeah, I'm going to be here. Like, this is what I'm going to do. And I will see myself on that stage. You're like, wow, I'm on this stage. How am I on this stage when anybody else probably would have been on the stage, you know, more so than I would have. And that's again, still ties into that same imposter mindset because you again feel like, well, should I be? And another part that goes with it, sorry, Gramps, this just kicked in my head as I'm going through this, is when you are in that point, you can have this thought of feeling like you're an imposter because, okay, let's say I'm on stage now and I'm actually presenting and are they going to, accept me that I should be here? Or is somebody going to come up and to me and say, oh, hey, yeah, you really shouldn't be here, that we made a mistake? So in your own head, you feel like you aren't the right person for this. You may not be the one that should have been up there. You're doing it, but you're kind of putting on this mask, hoping people don't notice that you feel like, oh, wow, this isn't for me, or this shouldn't be for me, or somebody else should be here. So it's that, it's the, definitely a constant internal struggle with that.
Yeah. For me, it's a passing thought. Like, I'm like, oh my God, there are thousands of people watching. Oh, this is fun. But we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to see if we answered Gramps' question. Gramps, do we answer your question?
Well, Sharif, you need to know that I'm from Zanesville, Ohio. So we're from the same part of the world. But I got two things out of Victor's answer. And it became much clearer, and I appreciate that, Victor. One is that, and I can say I've done this, and I'm sure many people, other people have too. You kind of fake your way through an interview for a job that you're really not qualified for, and somehow you get it, and then you got to do something about it. Okay, I think that affects just about anybody as they're going through their careers, whether you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, or even your 50s. But the second thing that I got out of what Victor said was, you know, it starts when you are a toddler, you know, when you're growing up 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. And it goes back to the theory that it really takes a village to raise a child. Now, village is obviously mom and dad, but it's aunts and uncles and neighbors. And in my case, and what I want to get through to everyone is grandparents. You got to get involved. You're the ones that have to give these kids the confidence that they can do what they can do. You know? And so if I was to say one thing that would say that would be what I would leave the audience with is, you know, when you love, you will teach others to love. So in that case, you know, we as a village must raise these kids so they don't have to go through what we have all gone through.
That's right. So we can get rid of that imposter influencer or imposter phenomenon. Dennis, what do you have for the people?
I liked what I was hearing here. There are a lot of great ideas, and I think that they can be applied to many areas of one's life. As for me, if you want to reach out to me, just connect with me on LinkedIn. You can see my name in the description there. The easiest way to find me. And like I said, I'm not really looking for new clients. I basically say no to most people. If you have a small business and you want some help, I do have a YouTube channel that I started recently called Snackable Solutions, where small business owners share tips on how to help each other grow their businesses. Just like Alan was saying, that 1% better each day mindset. So yeah, Snackable Solutions, or find me on LinkedIn.
Do we get some snacks? I will watch it.
Snacks of information.
I like snacks. Victor, what do you have for us?
Just going along with this, where, you know, if you feel like, you know, you've never really kind of known who you are or what you're good at, to give yourself that time to kind of break it down and look back at what you've connected with in your life. What are things that really kind of connect with you? What have you enjoyed? What are skills that you may have always dismissed, but maybe people always come to you for them? Those are things that you can actually think about and start realizing that, whoa, okay, maybe this is something I'm good at because people often come to me for this, and start realizing your actual true potential and how can you start to build that up as some direction for you, if that's something that's going to really kind of bring some passion and enjoyment to your life.
And where can people find you?
Oh, and they can find me definitely at victormoss.com. That's my website. And it has links to other social medias as well. So that would be a great starting point.
Thank you, Victor. Alan, go ahead and close out our show.
You know, it's interesting. What's the one thing, the one takeaway? It's so hard to answer that question. I'll tell you the best lesson I ever got. It was from my mom when I was 7 years old. She said, Alan, you could be a CEO and you can be a farmer. I'm going to love you either way. Mm-hmm. But if you're a CEO and you aim high, you can wake up one day and just decide to be a farmer. And so, but it doesn't necessarily work the other way around. And so she said, aim high and you'll have choices. Whatever high means to you, aim high, believe in your own ability to make incrementally more positive choices. My father passed away when I was 2 years old, and I grew up in tremendous adversity. I was fortunate to have a mom and an older sister. I had a stepdad. He left at 14. I'm not going to get through my story, but what I will tell you is that I've made incrementally more and more positive choices, and the compound effect of that has been nothing short of magnificent. I am more fulfilled today. In high school, everyone said, these are the best years of your life. Yeah, BS. Absolute BS, at least for me. My high school was brutal. But the point is that your life will get better. Your life will not improve until you improve. That is my main takeaway. Make more positive choices each day, fail forward, and be consistent. Believe in yourself. I believe in your own potential. You can find us at Next Level University. We have, you brush your teeth every day. We want to be self-improvement in your pocket from anywhere on the globe every single day. We never miss, never have. We just surpassed 800 episodes. Health, wealth, and love, holistic self-improvement every single day from your pocket.
Wow, that's some next level information. I tell you that right now. 800 episodes is nothing to sneeze at. Congratulations for that. And like your mom said, if you're the CEO, you can always go and buy some farms. So, hey, it works out. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. I definitely appreciate your support. I appreciate you watching. I appreciate you sharing. I appreciate you tuning in. But please support our guests. Our guests have been here this morning to support you, to share their information, their stories with you. So please support them. Their website link is in the description box. You can also follow them on social media. Reach out to them, send them a message. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.